We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Philip has just lost the respect of the Youth League football team he coaches. He was asked what New England should do in the draft, and his answer was objectively terrible. The Athletic just wrote a great article about this, but Philip doesn't have the Athletic or the respect of a boisterous group of 11-year-olds who once looked up to him. Learn from Philip's error, get the Athletic, and get the info you need to speak draft fluently.
Excited to finally sit down with Michigan's new linebacker coach, George Helo. He joins us today, and we'll give you an update on what is going on in the basketball world with my partner, Brian Bush. We'll get to all that here on In the Trenches.
Let's go In the Trenches with John Jansen. The former Wolverines captain and Michigan Sports Hall of Famer will take you inside the locker room with players and coaches.
In the short time that I've been with it, one thing that I can see is everything in this state and everything from, you know, daily routine when you step foot into this building, is it is all Michigan. It is all go blue. Everybody's behind us, and it's like a one-track mindset.
Once again, here's John Jansen.
Welcome back, friends, and we are going to have a chance to hear from the linebacker coach at the University of Michigan here, and that is George Helo, and we'll hear from him in just a little bit. We've got a breakdown of the defense, which we'll talk about in just a little bit, but I need an update from my partner, Brian Bush, on what is going on the hardwood. What are the expectations, Mr. Bush? The NCAA tournament, Juwan's first opportunity at the NCAA tournament. What are your expectations?
Well, mine are higher than a lot of people's around the college basketball landscape. I saw that ESPN put out every one of its experts, and one, Dick Vitale, picked Michigan to go to the Final Four, not even to win the national championship. And, you know, I think that shows what Isaiah Livers means and what people believe it means to have him sidelined indefinitely. But boy, you don't have many opportunities in this tournament where you're a one seed and you're doubted. But Michigan has that unique positioning for this season. I can't wait. I'm fired up. Yeah, it's going to be hard because the entire NCAA tournament is hard. Of course it's going to be hard. And yes, Michigan is better with Isaiah Livers on the floor, but I would not be surprised if in a couple of weeks all these experts are sitting there going, boy, we kind of missed the boat on that one seed in the East, Michigan.
Well, and when you talk about missing the boat, obviously Isaiah Livers, they're going to miss his, you know, what, just over 13 points a game, but they still have Hunter Dickinson. They've got Franz Wagner. I know those guys need to play well. Eli Brooks, Mike Smith, those are the standard guys that have to step up and play well. And Brandon Johns Jr., in absence of Isaiah Livers, who else in your thought has to step up? And it's not that it's going to be one guy, and you're not going to replace an Isaiah Livers, but who fills the void of the production?
Yeah, I mean, I think Brandon Johns Jr. is probably the highest upside guy, maybe high risk, high reward with starting him, and I think the conversation starts there. It's such a luxury for this team to have Shaun D. Brown Jr. He was a three-year starter at Wake Forest in the ACC. He is able to do a lot of the things that Isaiah Livers can do. Now, Michigan is keeping him on the bench, at least they did in that semifinal of the Big Ten tournament, which I think that role really fits him well. But those are going to be the two from a production standpoint. And then in terms of gobbling up minutes and just basically trying to break even for you in stretches where maybe there's foul trouble or Sean D and Brandon aren't playing as well as they could. Terrence Williams II, a freshman who, I mean, think back to the non-conference, he was vital for Michigan in several games, including surviving that Oakland game in overtime that probably kept Michigan on the one line, all things considered. If they lose that game, they're probably a two seed in this NCAA tournament. So it's going to be collective. That's something Juwan Howard's talked about. So we discussed it a little bit. We had an episode of Defend the Block on Wednesday. Eli Brooks talked to the challenges and the opportunities of Isaiah being out for some of the other players on this team, talked about the, you know, the emotional side of it. I mean, Eli and Isaiah came in at the same time. They're very close. We talked to Akenray Johnson of Michigan women's basketball. They have their top seed ever, a six seed, facing off with Florida Gulf Coast, a really good program. The Eagles only lost two games all season. And then we talked to both Mount St. Mary's play-by-play guy, Adam Pohl, and Larry Hale, the play-by-play broadcaster for Texas Southern, to get a little bit of a feel, because we're releasing this on Thursday. Thursday night, Michigan will find out its opponent. The first game of the NCAA tournament is Mount St. Mary's and Texas Southern. And how about this stat for you before we get into football? Adam shared with us that Mount St. Mary's has played in the round of 64 four times in the Division I level. All four times, the team that they lost to ended up winning the national championship the next season.
Oh, so lots to look forward to in 2022.
As long as Mount St. Mary's wins. So I think if you're looking for a rooting interest, I would probably lean you toward Mount St. Mary's, because 4-for-4, that's a pretty incredible stat.
It is, and we will definitely keep an eye on that. That game obviously will happen this evening, Thursday night. Michigan will tee it up against whoever they're playing on Saturday, the 20th, at 3 o'clock. And if you want to hear that full preview of the upcoming games in the tournament, make sure that all you simply got to do is hit the back button, because you are on the MGO Blue podcast feed here right now listening to In the Trenches. That back button will take you back to the main page, and you can find the Defend the Block episodes all lined up there, as well as every episode that Brian Bush has had throughout the season on Defend the Block, any of the post-game episodes, and as well as we've had a number of great guests here as we continue to work our way through the coaching staff and some of the leaders on this team. Make sure you go back to catch any of those episodes that you may have missed. So, Mr. Bush, let's get to it. 7 from 77.
Yeah, number one, we gave a progress report last week on the Michigan offense. Let's do the same with the defense. You've talked to a few coaches on that side of the ball about what this new system, approach, culture will be like. We don't know exactly what it is, so give me what your investigative reporting can show at this point. What have you been able to gather? Do you have a picture or a rough draft of what this defense's identity, culture, system will look like?
Well, if you're relying on me as an investigative reporter, you will be sorely disappointed. But what I know about this team, in talking to Aiden Hutchinson a few weeks ago and in talking to the coaching staff, Mike McDonald, the new defensive coordinator, right now they're focusing on concepts. And George Hilo is going to talk about that a little bit more in just a few minutes. But it's the concepts of what they're expecting from the linebackers, what they're expecting from this defensive line, what they're expecting from the secondary, and how it all fits together. And if they can get this defense understanding, hey, if Aiden Hutchinson is doing, you know, this, if he's putting pressure on the quarterback, then the linebackers, even if they're on the other side of the field, need to be aware of what's going on so that they're doing something that is complementary to what the defensive line is doing, as well as the secondary. So right now it's based on concept. And the one trait that I'm hearing from both sides of the ball, whether it's players, coaches, any of the administrators that have been there, is that this is a team right now, especially the defense, that is flying around the field. They are emphasizing speed. And whether you're talking to Josh Gattis about the wide receivers, his emphasis is on speed. If you're talking to the defensive staff, whether it's on the, you know, Coach Nua or George Hilo, it's all, the emphasis is on speed and attacking and swarming to the football.
Number two, you mentioned Aiden Hutchinson. Of course, he will be vital. Fans know the names Chris Hinton, Donovan Jeter. What must those two, Hinton and Jeter, and others do to help lessen the load on Aiden, who will no doubt be a focal point for opposing teams, to help make that front four as a whole a menacing one?
They need to be consistent. They need to be consistent and understand exactly what their responsibilities are. If it's, hey, this is a rundown, doesn't mean that you're not anticipating there might be a pass, but you've got to be solid against the run. You've got to make sure that you handle your gap and that you handle your responsibility. And so if it's Mozzie Smith, hey, if I'm supposed to take on two blockers and I'm flushing everything out to Aiden, or I'm flushing everything out to whoever it is, linebackers, Josh Ross, then that's what your job is. Don't try and do too much. Just make sure that you are doing your 1/11th, and the other 10 guys on that field are going to be doing their part. And if you can do that and work together, like I talked about just a minute ago, and work in concert with each other, now all of a sudden that defense, even though it's going to be very inexperienced at some positions, will have success.
Number three on our 7 from 77, we will talk with George Hilo, as promised, the linebackers coach. The linebacker room features a few well-known names, Josh Ross, Michael Barrett. How do those two elevate their games, and who else is there to watch for among those linebackers?
Well, you know, you're going to be looking for an Anthony Solomon. You know, David Ojabo is listed as a linebacker. He's going to be in kind of that hybrid role, I believe, that linebacker, edge rusher. You're going to be looking at Nakai Hill-Green, who I think is really going to come on this year. William Mohan, a couple of guys that were in that, you know, that Viper position in the previous defense, they're going to have to figure out how do they fit into a more, I don't want to say traditional, because you're going to use guys and their abilities how they need to be used, but how they fit into a Will Mike Sam sort of defense and how they fit into those positions. And again, it's going to come down to consistency. They're going to be a little bit undersized. William Mohan right now, 205 pounds. This offseason needs to put on a little bit of weight. Keep that same speed that he has. Anthony Solomon, 212. Again, need to bulk up just a little bit, but they want to make sure that speed is the key. Pursuit to the football, sideline to sideline, and when your number is called to get after the quarterback, if it's a blitz, if it's a zone blitz, no matter what it is, then you got to turn on the afterburners and get after it.
Number four, the corners. Vincent Gray, someone you've talked up for a while. Gamon Green got some extended action last season. Are those two pretty locked into the two starting cornerback spots, and who else should we be watching behind them?
Yeah, I believe so. I mean, those are your headliners, but then you got to look at a guy like Makari Page and some of the younger guys like a Jordan Moran, R.J. Moten, Andre Selden. Those are some guys that, hey, they've been in the system now in terms of, you know, the Michigan football program. It's time for them to take the next step, gain some confidence, gain the ability to, if you're going nickel, you're going to have an extra guy out there. Who's that guy going to be? How are they going to be in coverage? And we saw them struggle last year, you know, against Michigan State, against Indiana. What are they going to do when they're in man coverage? How are they going to handle the zone coverage package that's going in right now? It's more important for these guys right now mentally to be tuned in to, hey, this is my responsibility. This is what I'm doing. I have the physical skills, but I need to be able to translate that from the practice field to the game field by having confidence in knowing I'm where I'm supposed to be, when I'm supposed to be there, and how it's working with everything else in that secondary.
Number five on our 7 from 77. It's tough not to be pretty bullish about the safeties on this team. Of course, Dax Hill entering his third season, the former 5-star recruit. Brad Hawkins is back. He certainly had every opportunity to go pursue a professional opportunity this offseason, but he's returned to Ann Arbor. How can these two take that next step and form one of the best safety duos in the Big Ten?
Well, Brad Hawkins needs to use his experience. He's been a guy that's had a lot of time out on the field. He's got to be able to, and as well as Dax Hill. We saw him come onto the scene 2 years ago against Indiana when he had his first interception, and then we saw him play against Alabama, and everybody kind of points to that game where, you know, yeah, he got beat on a touchdown pass early in the game, but then came on to play extremely well. Dax Hill is that five-star guy. He needs to play like that five-star guy. And at times he has, but he just needs to be more consistent at doing that. I think he's going to be one of the most talented safeties in the country. He's got the speed. He's got the willingness to come up and support the run. He's got the awareness and the ball-closing speed to make plays down the field. So I think this is going to be a big year for Dax Hill.
Number six, we'll lump special teams into this breakdown of where we stand right now on that Michigan defensive side. What seems pretty solidified in terms of the kicker and punter, Brad Robbins at punter, Jake Moody at kicker, and Giles Jackson, you'd assume, will get plenty of opportunities as a returner. This feels like going into the season as a real area of potential strength for this team, doesn't it?
It is, and when you're talking about the kicking game, it's about consistency. Jake Moody, whether it's a, you know, an extra point, whether it's a 20-yard field goal, 30-yard field goal, he needs to be consistent so that the offense knows, hey, we've got to get to the 25-yard line, and we know that we have, you know, 3 points. And then we can take our shots. We can be a little bit more, you know, aggressive at how we're pursuing things. But they've got to know that, hey, if we can't convert on a third down, at least we know we've got 3 points. Brad Robbins, again, a redshirt senior, experience at that position, but you've got to be consistent. Consistent with your drop, consistent with your kicks, consistent with your location. He should be, at this point, be able to pinpoint where he's putting that football. And not that you're always looking for a coffin corner kick, but, you know, hey, if the coverage unit knows it's going to be outside the right hash, then the ball needs to be outside the right hash. If it's at the left hash, it has to be there every single time. And then don't count out the number two punter in the country that is on Michigan's roster in this 2021 recruiting class, Tommy Doman. I think he is going to have a terrific career at the University of Michigan. So look for him to get some opportunities throughout the season just to, you know, give him some experience, get him on the field.
Boy, you know he's got a bright future if John Jansen's hyping up a punter.
Hey, it's a third of the game. Offense, defense, special teams. Even though I don't like it, it's still there.
That's true. Yeah, it's not how you normally frame the conversation, but I do appreciate you hyping up that special team side. Number seven, John, this is off the beaten path, but I don't know if in the entirety of In the Trenches, and this is episode 178, if I've ever brought up overtime with you in college football. So the rules committee has proposed a change to overtime to kind of really speed up the extra 2-point conversions that are needed. They're proposing first overtime, if you score a touchdown, you can kick the point after. Second overtime, if you score a touchdown, you have to go for two. And then if the game is still tied after two overtimes, you just kind of do a 2-point conversion penalty kick style where you just alternate going for two to determine a winner. What are your thoughts on overtime? Like, are you good with the current system? Does this sound intriguing? Do you want to do an offensive line tug of war? Like, where do you stand?
This offensive line tug of war would be awesome. But I don't like this proposal because one team might be better from the 2-yard line on goal line offense than the other team. And you are putting one unit and one specific facet of the game on the field to decide what's going on for the entire game. I would much rather see them back the ball up instead of, you know, starting at the 25-yard line, where if you don't get a first down, you could probably kick a field goal, back it up to the 35 or the 45-yard line, start there. That will allow more of the offense to be able to be run. Yes, it may extend that first overtime, but it's more difficult to convert from that point, and it just seems like a more fair way to decide what has gone on for 4 quarters. You don't want to just put it on one unit. And maybe, hey, we're really good at goal line offense. If you're that team, hey, that's great. Put it at the 2-yard line and let's tee it up. But if you're not, it seems like a disadvantage.
Fair enough. All right, before we get to George Hilo, our bacon fact for today. John, if you are looking for a team outside of Michigan to support in this year's men's NCAA tournament, may I suggest Virginia Commonwealth University, the 10 seed. They face Oregon on Saturday in the first round. Why? They have a player, the only player in this tournament, with the last name Bacon. Brendan Medley Bacon is a former Coppin State star, was All-MEAC last year. He is a bench option for VCU. He is from Baltimore. He has the last name Medley Bacon, which sounds kind of delicious in and of itself, but there is bacon in there. John Jansen, I assume now you're advancing VCU to your Final Four.
Well, I won't put him in my Final Four, but I will put him maybe on the all-tournament team. And whenever you have a medley of bacon, it sounds like it's Saturday morning in the Jansen household. You have all different kinds of bacon, and if that's what it takes to have a little bit of excitement, to have a little intrigue into the NCAA tournament, then so be it. Bacon is always good, whether it's a last name or it's on my plate.
So before we get to George Hilo, I got to get on record, what is your NCAA tournament pick? What's your Final Four? What's your national champion? Any big upsets? Give me the John Jansen bracket breakdown.
Oh, I can't do that.
Yes, you can.
No, not until it's decided. I mean, this Thursday, no. We will get to this next week. I don't want Brian Bush. I don't want anybody else stealing my picks. This is a very scientific way that I go about doing this. So I will give you my picks next week, Mr. Bush. Fill out your own bracket.
The tournament starts when we release this today.
Yes, but you don't have to have your bracket filled out until moments before that first game happens. So I want you to fill out your own bracket. Don't be using a cheat sheet from John Jansen, the tournament expert. You can find out next week, my friend.
Just go to the interview. I'm disgusted with you.
I hope you are. I wanted to throw that wrench in your entire day into your bracket. So, hey, without further ado, I want to welcome in George Hilo to Ann Arbor, to Michigan football, and I'm excited to introduce him to you, the fans, here for Michigan football on In the Trenches. Joining us now on In the Trenches is linebackers coach George Hilo. Coach, first of all, thanks for joining us and welcome to Ann Arbor.
Yeah, thank you, John. It's great to be on the show. Looking forward to this and excited to be on the show today.
What is it about Michigan or about Ann Arbor that, you know, that you've come to learn just in the short time that you've been with Michigan football?
Well, in the short time that I've been with it, one thing that I can see is everything in this state and everything from, you know, daily routine when you step foot into this building, it is all Michigan. It is all go blue. Everybody's behind us. And it's like a one-track mindset, you know, ready to go. Everyone around here dots I's, cross T's, and is just is passionate about Michigan. It doesn't matter what the weather is either, John. Outside, you know, I got here is -2 degrees blizzard. I mean, we have 5:30. Everybody's in the stadium ready to go with our 6 a.m. run. So buttoned up, and the perception of Michigan football is as big as as a kid, whether you're from the south or the north, you grew up thinking about it.
I was going to ask you that, your impression of Michigan football growing up and what it was like and how it kind of relates to what you've learned since you've been here.
Yeah. So, you know, I'm from Jacksonville, Florida, so I'm from the South, played football in the SEC. So that is what I was brought up around. But when you talk about like Michigan, you know, the first thing that you think is, you know, the rivalry, Michigan, Ohio State. And then when you talk about Michigan, you think of conference championships and Bo Schembechler, and you think about Jim Harbaugh and Heisman Trophy winners from Charles Woodson to Desmond Howard, list goes on. So when I got the opportunity to talk to Coach and be able to come here, it was a no-brainer, and it was like, wow, the University of Michigan, really? So it's been really good.
And I know our listeners are going to love the fact that you said the first thing you think about when you think of Michigan is a rivalry between Michigan and Ohio State. How much do you guys focus on that rivalry on a daily basis?
Every day. And you know that when you're – around Coach Harbaugh, when our guys step foot into the weight room every day, you know, it's a one-track mindset on kicking their butt and anybody else on the schedule's butt that we play. And our players are mentally conditioning themselves right now to go out there and to fight with anybody. And it's something that's exciting to be around. It's something that everybody's buying into. They're believing. There's a great energy in the building. There's great effort and enthusiasm, and, you know, whether it's a Ohio or any of the other teams, you know, we're going to be relentless and not be denied.
What's it been like since you've been here, developing relationships with the coaches, developing relationships with your unit, the linebacker unit?
It's been great. There's a bunch of guys in the linebacker room right now are young, but everybody's eager to learn. And that's what makes it so great. We've got a bunch of great young men that want to learn, that want to get better, that want to learn the new defense, that are putting in the time, that are putting in the work, that want to be up here, that want to dive into the playbooks, that want to get in the simulator and train every day, that want to watch film, want to watch tape, and take good notes. Whether it's a guest speaker that we bring in or just in normal meetings, you don't have to tell them to get out pen paper. They're already taking notes and they want to be great. So that's the first step to anything, is having the willingness to want to learn. And then as far as being around these other coaches, this is a young staff, but it's a very experienced staff. A lot of guys have NFL backgrounds. A lot of guys have been at other big time major programs from big traditions, national championship teams to, like I said, NFL. And we have a lot of experience with a lot of young guys with a lot of juice, with a lot of good energy that come to work and they bring it every day. So there's nothing but positive vibes as far as that goes with the players, especially at the linebacker position, and then as far as the other coaches in the building.
Now, you guys, obviously, under Mike McDonald as the defensive coordinator, have come in. You're installing a new defense, a different mindset, and, you know, a culture is thrown around a lot. I don't necessarily know that it's going to be a different culture, but it's going to be different voices delivering a different message to the players. What are some of the hurdles that you have just seen in the first 2 months? You're on campus, and then all of a sudden, spring ball starts. You're 3 weeks into it. What are some of the challenges that you've noticed of, you know, building those relationships and, you know, just trying to get the information, the knowledge from, you know, what you guys talk about in the coaches' meetings to your players?
Right. So you talked about culture first. It starts with Coach Harbaugh, and he's laid down a good culture, a good foundation for what we're going to do. As far as Mike coming in, he comes from the Baltimore Ravens staff. And I know that people talk about the Baltimore Ravens defense, right? When you look at that staff and all the position coaches, they've all got defensive coordinator jobs. All right. And whatever it is that you play on defense, John, whether it's split safety, if it's middle of the field, closed open, if it's simulated pressures, fire zone, split safety, whatever it is that you do, it's how you do it. And one thing that we talk about on defense a lot, and you could talk to Mike more about it, is the culture. And it's not what we do, it's how we do it. It's the way that you run to the ball, the way that you put on your helmet, the way that you strike blockers, the way that you take angles to the ball, the way that you strike people at the point of attack and you finish in a dominant position. And those are all the things. You know, in the 2 months that we've been here, we've been learning a lot of defense and we've been talking about a lot of scheme, but we've also been, you know, going from getting into a stance, you know, from, you know, if you're a linebacker position, the weight's on the inside balls of your feet, you know, nose over toes, chest over knees. We've been talking about footwork, eyes, assignment, alignment. And those are the types of things that have nothing to do with scheme. How you strike, how do you come out with your hips, how do you lock out, how you take good injury angles to the ball, knowing what you're supposed to do, how you're supposed to do it, why it's important to do it that way. And that's something that Mike's done a really good job of emphasizing to all the coaches on the staff, and that I think we've gotten really good work at.
Knowing that this is a new defense, this is a new staff on the defensive side of things other than Sean Nua, the defensive line coach, other than Josh Ross and Michael Barrett in your room, this is a relatively young in both experience and age. Is there a benefit? I mean, we'd all love to have, you know, what, 3 fifth-year seniors starting. That's just not usually the case. Is there a benefit to having those young guys, those young players in there when you are installing a new defense and you have new coaches? There's really not a lot of preconceived notion as to, well, this is how we did it before. Now you're asking me to do this.
Yeah, I think there's a lot of good to having youth in your room. And for one thing, we talk about habits and behaviors all the time. And when you've got guys that are brand new, they don't have like good or bad habits when it comes to, you know, the way that they see the game and their technique and understanding it and teaching progressions. So a lot of guys that, you know, it doesn't always happen this way. And, you know, John is playing, but a lot of guys that have been in a system or they've done things a certain way for a long period of time that are old, it's hard for them to kind of change over and to learn something new. If you're a young guy, the way that you're being trained through installations and teach progressions at a young age, that's the only way you know that you're learning it. So there's some benefits to that. But going back to being willing to learn and, you know, trying hard to execute the plays. And, you know, one thing that we do at linebacker that I think is really good is we don't explain the plays like, hey, this is what you're doing on this play. Memorize it. This is the pressure. This is the coverage that you're running. We teach our guys in concepts. So this is how you play three deep zone man match. This is how you play spot drop zone. You know, this is how you play man. And these are the teaching progressions to whatever it is that you're teaching. I just, you know, threw out those, wasn't specific to any defense that we're playing. But, you know, that's a big thing, explaining stuff and concepts to them and just letting them learn.
Well, especially with young players, when you're explaining things in concepts, and I can't remember if it's 9, 10, or 11 practices, somewhere in there that you guys have had so far, a lot of times you see big jumps from one practice to another. How has this group taken to those concepts? And if there's any examples of you know, taking those big jumps from practice to practice, if you could share with us.
Yeah, so, you know, playing different calls from day to day. One thing when you're in spring ball, you're kind of getting a play and you're installing it and then you're running that play the next day. And a lot of times you're having to watch the film and make the corrections with the guys and then install a new play and then walk through that play that you're installing the next day. So like just being able to take what we're teaching you from day one and then make the corrections from day two and then keep learning from what goes into the next install is a big thing that you've got to be able to do and know how to function from day to day.
I want to talk a little bit, as we talked to George Helo, who's the linebacker coach here at Michigan. You've been on the job too much, but you've been a football coach for 9 or 10 years. And football, as you mentioned, you played in the SEC. You've coached in the SEC. You were at a Big Ten school in Maryland last year. But you've also had a chance to work under some really good and very successful coaches. You were, you know, under Nick Saban at Alabama, Kirby Smart at Georgia. You were at Florida State when they won a national championship. What is it that you've learned, or, you know, how have those coaches influenced you in how you coach now?
Well, I think, you know, all those coaches that you mentioned from Nick Saban, Jimbo Fisher, those two, you know, were great at a very young age, great opportunity to work under. And then, you know, you throw Mark Richt in there, that just as a man to a football coach is as good as they get. And I learned a lot of things, you know, about recruiting, about to run a room, how to treat people, how to, you know, organize things kind of, you know, from A to Z and learn teaching progressions and how to evaluate players and install things and teach guys concepts versus memorization. And all of them kind of, you know, John, they've got a thing that they're great at. But, you know, being the best football coach that you can be, I think it's just taking a little bit from each coach and applying those things that you thought were really good to having your own formula. And that's something that I've tried to do at every stop that I've made over the years and, you know, continue to learn. We were just talking about a couple of minutes ago in our defensive staff meeting, what are we going to do for professional development, you know, in the later month of May that we can do better than what we're doing now after having evaluation of spring ball. And I think in order to be great, you've got to, you know, have two things. You got to be hungry for best practice and you got to be committed to continuous learning. So I'm very thankful for all the great experiences I've had with the great coaches that I've had a chance to be a small part of, and look forward to learning and growing and developing as a great coach here at Michigan under Coach Harbaugh.
I talked a few weeks ago to Mo Linguist, obviously, who's the, you know, defensive backs coach here at Michigan, and I asked him this question, and I've always been fascinated because every coach is a little bit different, and they've gotten to a certain point in different ways, but how hard is it, especially in today's day and age, where these young players in high school, they're going to 7-on-7 camps, they're getting coached up at a much younger age, and an advantage is that you have all of this film to be able to watch them, you know, whether it's on the internet or, you know, different avenues to be able to watch it. But how hard is it to evaluate a 16 or 17 year old kid and project him to when he's going to be 19 or 20 and you want him to be playing the best football possible for you?
Yeah. Well, a lot of the seasons were at states that didn't play were at a disadvantage, but a lot of the states, like Illinois, you're talking about, you know, football in Chicago and North Carolina and California, they're having spring football right now. So it's really good being able to get some tape on them and you can further your evaluation. What you like to do as a coach is get as many players on campus as you can so you can evaluate them hands-on. So a lot of this year is going off trust of what you can do, and then you're trying to get coaches that you know to send as much updated film as they can, from workouts that can happen in the weight room to on the field, and then just staying in tune with the scrimmages and the games that are going on this spring. But it's not easy, and we've got a great recruiting department here at Michigan that's staying on top of all those things, and along with the hours that we're putting in spring ball, a lot of time is dedicated to, you know, our Zoom meetings that we do with recruits, but along with evaluation. And evaluation is a thing that never stops. It always goes on. And I think people from the outside looking in, they say, well, these are the linebackers or the DBs or the O linemen that this school's going after right now, today. And to, you know, tomorrow that can change because you have another guy that you evaluated by watching their film, and you know, and then that guy moves up on the board in front of the other guy, and why you see a lot of guys commit early right now, especially with all the things that are going on with COVID. But no, it's a unique situation, kind of what we're going through, and you know, we'll see what's going to happen here, John. We're supposed to hear something, I think, April 15th, and hopefully we'll be able to get these guys on campus so they can work out for you and you can better evaluate talent.
Yeah, hopefully, you know, everything seems to be trending in a good direction for, you know, obviously the pandemic, and hopefully we're getting to a point where you can actually have those on-campus visits, and you guys can even go and off-campus to recruit as well. There's just been a number of challenges over the last year that different organizations, you know, entities, whether it's college football or business, have all had to deal with and adapt. And when you look at what you've been able to do, I know you're coming from Maryland under Mike Locksley last year. How have you had to adjust over the past 12 months how you operate as a coach?
Yeah. Well, you know, I think you're always growing. My background, you know, as a player, I was a safety. And then, as a graduate assistant and working under, you know, Jimbo Fisher and Nick Saban, I was a back end guy. And then when I got to Colorado State, I coached, you know, worked with the outside linebackers for 2 years, and also worked a little bit with Kirby Smart with the linebacker room. So, you know, coaching linebackers at Maryland was good. Also did the special teams. So a lot of things that you do on special teams is relating to defensive backs and linebackers. And, was a great year of experience given the circumstances of what was going on. But the transition's been great coming here, you know, and being able to work with a guy like Mike McDonald that I've known for a long time, who I know and trust, and a great system that we're in. And I know what he's about. He stands for all the right things. And he's also got a background with coaching linebackers. So just really looking forward to working with him and growing a room and, you know, making this core group of guys great here at Michigan.
You mentioned you've known Mike McDonald for quite some time. Go back and what was the first introduction like? Where did you guys meet? Tell us a little bit about the relationship that you have with him.
Yeah, so Mike was a graduate assistant coach at the University of Georgia, and I was a graduate assistant coach at Florida State. And we were playing Florida and Clemson. Both of our teams were scheduled to play them. So they hopped on a plane and came and met with us down in Tallahassee to talk about both of those teams. And I just noticed that Mike was, you know, we were both GAs at the time. He was a really sharp guy. And we kind of had our own private football talks on the side that were really good. And then the next year, I got to the University of Georgia, and me and Mike worked closely together for 3 months there before he left to go to the Baltimore Ravens. And then from there, we stayed in touch. When I coached the safeties at Colorado State, we'd go, you know, on ski trips and whatnot together. And, you know, we've remained very close since then. Of course, when I was at Maryland last year, I was only 30 minutes away from Mike because he was in Baltimore. And we reconnected there and hung out a lot. And when him and Coach Harbaugh called with the opportunity to go to Michigan, it was really a no-brainer because of our relationship and then because of the place that this is and how special it is. So it made it easy. But Mike's a great guy, and he's got a clear vision for how it needs to be. And I'm just excited as heck, John, to go to work. And, you know, all the effort and enthusiasm and the passion that we've got going on right now, that I think is going to go a long way, and we're looking forward to carrying it into next season.
Well, we're certainly happy to have you here as we talk to George Helo, the linebackers coach here at Michigan. And before I let you go, I'll end on this one. I know that, you know, everybody I've talked to, the energy is high. Guys are flying around. They're having fun playing the game. But when it comes down to the nuts and bolts, and when you look at your group from that first practice to whenever you're able to get that last practice in, what is the progression that you want to see from your group? What do you want them to be able to master in these 15, you know, practices that you have in the spring?
I want to see guys go out and give all out effort every day, and then just continue to grow as a football player and to get better, you know, better than you were yesterday. And that's what we've done up to 9 practices right now. We've taken a group, if you watch the tape from day 1 to day 9, and it is like night and day. And, you know, that's got to be your goal. You know, you just take a little bit every day and you get better and you focus on what you can control and not other things, and don't, you know, focus on things that are outside of our building and compete and learn things like we've been talking about, John, and concepts and not memorizing stuff. And, I'm pleased with it. They're giving great effort. They're trying, they're learning, and they're growing a lot as a group, and it's been encouraging to see.
Well, George, I really appreciate your time, and I look forward to sometime this summer sitting down and getting some more specifics about some individuals in that room. But we'll let you get settled in. We'll let you watch some more film and get to know these guys more before we start talking about that. I appreciate your time.
Thanks, John.
Well, I want to thank George Helo for spending a little bit of time with us, introducing himself to you, the listener. And as always, I want to thank you guys for listening and tuning in to In the Trenches. Mr. Bush, thank you. Make sure that you keep an eye on that Mount St. Mary's, Texas Southern game tonight. Because, Mr. Bush, I'm going to bring you back in here for another second. Who was it that we are pulling for? Is it Mount St. Mary's?
Yes, Mount St. Mary's. The last 4 times they've gotten to the round of 64, they have lost all those games, but the team has gone on to win the national championship the very next season. So not this year. So I guess maybe if they beat Texas Southern, they win it this year, and then if they beat Mount St. Mary's, they'll win it next year. I think we'd take one of two.
Yes, we'd take one of two. We'll take both. So make sure you tune in tonight, Thursday night, to watch that game. And on Saturday at 3 o'clock, Michigan will take on the winner of that Mount St. Mary's Texas Southern game. If you want to hear any more information or a quick breakdown of or deep dive into the tournament for Michigan, make sure you listen to Mr. Bush on Defend the Block that came out on Wednesday. Go back and find that one. And he will have an episode coming out after every tournament game. So make sure sure you stay tuned here on MGO Blue Podcast. Coming up next week, we're going to have offensive line coach, new offensive line coach, Sharon Moore, stopping by in the trenches. So make sure you stay tuned in on Thursday for that as well. And for anything that's going on Michigan football, stay tuned because we'll bring it to you here.
And also you can come back next week and find out about John's perfect bracket, because that's what this is all about. I'll put mine out there. Michigan, Gonzaga, Baylor, Oklahoma State. Take that, John.
Ooh, yeah. Well, see, I didn't want to give it because I'm in the running for that $1 million perfect bracket. So hold tight. We'll get it to you next week on In the Trenches.
Thanks for listening to this week's edition of In the Trenches with John Jansen, part of our Michigan Athletics Podcast Network. MGO Blue Podcasts. The preceding is a Learfield IMG College presentation of the Michigan Sports Network.